Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanya Wase, Yake. Hello, may everything be well with you as it is with me. Today we will continue on discussing the nature of Kabbalah and its origins, and we will be discussing the background of Merkaba mysticism. But before we get started today, I'm going to do as I do every day before the start of every shiur, and that is to recite the Kaddish for the dead and the mourners of the dead. So, those of you who are listening, please close your eyes and remember someone to whom you are close who has died. And in doing so, you will honor that person's life and bless his or her memory with the light of your own consciousness. Yiskadal v'yishkadash me rabo, bolmo dive ro kirase, v'yamlik malkase, makayakon uvyoy makahon, uvkaya de kol beis Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman koryev, ve'imru omein. Yehe shme rabo mavorak le'olam ole olmayo, Yisparak ve'yistavak ve'yisparar ve'yisramam, ve'yisnase ve'yishadar ve'yisale, ve'yishalal, Shmeidu kadsho beraku, le'elo minkol berkaso vishoroso, tushbikoso venekemoso da'amiron be'omo ve'imru omein. Yehe shlomo rabo min shamayo, ve'kayim aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omein. O se shalom bimramo, hu yeshe shalom, aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael ve'imru omein. Thank you very much. Now then, we have, as I said earlier, been discussing the background and the origins and antiquity of Kabbalah, and we've talked about how Kabbalah is just the most dominant stream of Jewish mysticism, and I've been giving you some short descriptions of the earlier forms of Jewish mysticism, Kabbalah having really come about at the end of the 12th century, in having appeared basically as its own form of Jewish mysticism at the end of the 12th century in southern France in an area called Provence. And so I've been giving you the forms of Jewish mysticism that came before Kabbalah, so that when we study Kabbalah in depth, we can do so not in a vacuum, but in the context, within the context in which it arose. And so I talked to you before quite a bit here in the last three classes in which we discussed Ezekiel's vision of the chariot, which is set forth in the first chapter of the book of Ezekiel. And today what I want to do, before I get into describing for you the form of mysticism which came out of that and which focused on Ezekiel's vision of the chariot, I want to give you a quick history of the Israelites and the Jewish people from which led up to Ezekiel's vision, so that when we discuss Ezekiel's vision and the mysticism that came out of it, that itself doesn't stand in a vacuum, unrelated to the history and events in which they took place. So today what I want to do is give you a short history, very brief history, of the Jewish people from the time when Moses died and turned over the leadership of the Israelites, who had, as you know, been wandering for 40 years in the desert, in the wilderness. When he turned his leadership over, when God instructed him that his successor as leader to the Israelite people would be Yahushua, in English called Joshua, but in Hebrew called Yahushua. And that was around, and this is very not set in stone, okay, this time period, because this, what we're talking about here is that there's a lot of dispute that's still ongoing and always has been ongoing among the scholars as to the time of the exodus of the Israelites from the land of Mitzrayim, from Egypt. And when they left there and then wandered for 40 years and then moved into the promised land of Canaan, there's an ongoing dispute among the scholars and the historians as to when that actually was. And even among some of them, whether it was, according to the account of the Bible. But we're going to assume that the account of the Bible is accurate, at least for spiritual purposes. And beyond that, the historicity is not really that important to us, and especially a dispute over whether the dates are 1200 B.C. or 1400 B.C. Those things aren't really of a concern to us, because we're involved in mysticism here, which is spirituality, not history. Okay, but I'm going to give you, within having given you that disclaimer, I'm going to give you our view as to the historical events that led up to the vision of Ezekiel. All right, and that would be in a timeline going from around 1200 BCE, before the Common Era, okay, 1200 BCE, to the time of Ezekiel's ministry, which was between about 593 BC and 571 BCE. So this is about a 700-year period. 600 to 700 year period, okay, from the time that, and the two bookmarks, okay, the two events in history that bookmark this period, okay, are the coming into the land of Canaan under the leadership, just after the death of Moses, under the leadership of Joshua, or as we say in Hebrew, Yahushua. Okay, to the time of the captivity of the Jews from the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom of Judah, in 593, the captivity of the Jews by the Babylonian Empire under King Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, and their exile and captivity in Babylon, which lasted between 50 and 70 years, depending on which historians and scholars that you want to go by. This was the time of Ezekiel's ministry. So what happened during that 600 to 700 year period formed the background to Ezekiel's ministry. It was with his knowledge of these events that he served as God's priest and prophet to the people of Israel, the people of Judah, the Jews, okay, of the southern kingdom. This was the people to whom he was the prophet. It was the people to whom he addressed his book of Ezekiel. Okay, so we can't just take his vision of the chariot, and he had three other visions in the book of Ezekiel. Okay, we can't take those visions out of the context of that 600 to 700 year period leading up to these times, because this is the context and background of which all of the Jews, the people of the members of the three tribes of the southern kingdom called Judah, which are the the Jews, from which almost all modern-day Jews are descended. Okay? But this is the milieu, the historical milieu, the context against which those people were familiar with and to which he was prophesying and for which those four visions were given to him by God, was for those people. And it was this background against which the Jews that were in captivity in Babylon and God's prophet and priest, Ezekiel, and God himself were familiar, and which led up to the visions that God gave to Ezekiel to give to the Jews in captivity in Babylon. So that's what we're going to discuss today as a short version of that history, so that we can be aware of that context, just as the people, just as Ezekiel was aware of it, and the Jews in captivity in Babylon were aware of it when he wrote his book. Well, he probably didn't even write it down. It was probably his disciples that wrote it down, but he spoke it orally. He traveled among the people with a circle of disciples teaching this. Okay, these four visions and what God told him to tell the Jews of in captivity in Babylonia. All right, so here is that short version of this 600 to 700 year history. Okay, so around 1200 BCE, Yahushua became the leader, succeeding Moses, okay, the leader of the Israelites, and he led them across the Jordan River after spying out that land under Moses. He was one of the 12 spies that were sent by Moses into the land of Canaan. And only he and one other one came back and gave a good report. The other 10 gave a bad report. And said, "Oh, Moses, we can't go near there. It's a land of giants, and they'll kill us all." And so they had to wander in the desert for a long period of time after this as a punishment. But anyway, all of that's over with, and now it's time for them to go into the promised land of milk and honey, the land of Canaan, promised to the patriarchs, to the fathers of the Jewish people, starting with Abraham. And they're going to take possession now of this land. And Moses has died, and so Yahushua has been appointed by God, at God's command, to be the leader of the 12 tribes. So what does he do? He walks to the banks, east bank of the Jordan River, and God had already told him this would happen, and the river parts. And so it's the same scene as what happened with Moshe at the Red Sea. The waters part, and the Israelites walk across dry ground to go from one condition into the next. At the Red Sea, they went from the condition of captivity and just a bunch of people to the other side into God's chosen nation of priestly people. And at the River Jordan, they went from the wandering homeless and the trying and the purification in the wilderness into full possession of the promised land after all these hundreds and hundreds of years. To take possession of the promised land, the land that God had given to their fathers and had promised to them through the covenants with their fathers, with the patriarchs. Okay, and once they got there, then Yahushua apportioned the land to the various tribes. Now, three of the tribes, of the 12 tribes, Reuben, Gad, and Mashir, which is half of Manasseh, were given the land on the east bank of the Jordan River. This was already promised to them by Moses, the land on the east, before they crossed the Jordan into Canaan. These three tribes, Reuben, Gad, and the eastern half of the Manasseh tribe, called Mashir, were given land on the east bank of the Jordan River. then that left, once they crossed over and all the fighting was more or less done, and the kingdoms that were in the land of Canaan at that time, the Canaanites were defeated by Joshua and the other tribes, then that land was then apportioned to the remaining eight tribes, plus the Levites, who the tribe of Levi, which was not given any land. I'll get to that in a second. So the other eight tribes were given the land according to God's command by lot. These are the tribes of Judah, Shimon, Benjamin, who took up residence. They got their land. We're in the southern south area, down by the Dead, to the west of the south of the River Jordan, in the west on the west side of the Dead Sea. Okay, and then that later became the Southern Kingdom. Okay, and then the remaining tribes, remaining five tribes that got land, became were Reuben, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, and Joseph. But since Joseph was dead, it was to his two sons who were adopted by Jacob, Joseph's two sons through his wife, his Egyptian wife. Their names were Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay, and they were both given land in the north. Now, some of these, you're going to say, this isn't five tribes, this is more than that. Well, yes, that's because the three that I just previously mentioned had already got their land. Reuben, Gad, and Asher, which is the eastern half of Manasseh, got their land. But these are all on to the north of the Dead Sea before the River Jordan enters the Dead Sea. So these became then ultimately the ten tribes of the north, which ultimately became the northern kingdom of Israel. Okay, but this is before that time. There were no kingdoms at that time. Okay, now I promised to tell you about the tribe of Levi. They were given no land. Instead, that tribe, the Levites, were given cities, and they were told that they were to serve all the tribes as priests and ministers of God. And the tribes were told that they had to support them. And so that was how they were taken care of. All right, so now from the next period of time is from this 1200 BCE, before the Common Era, until about 1021 BCE. And again, these dates are fuzzy because the scholars are in dispute. They can't be exact about these. But for about 180 years, the 12 tribes, the Israelites, were a decentralized confederation of these 12 tribes. They had no king. They were bound together, really, only by their common faith and history. They were all Israelites. They were all the Jews, the Jewish people. Okay, and I got to be careful about saying they were the Jewish people, because really, the Jews of today are descended from the 12 southern tribes, not from the 10, I'm sorry, from the three southern tribes, not from the 10 tribes of the north. Now you're going to say, well, that's 13. Yeah, that's 13. Because what happened was the tribe of Simeon, or Shimon, in the south, right after they took possession of the southern hill country, the area of the hills and mountains and forests to the west of the Dead Sea, the area where Jerusalem's at, and I believe Hebron. Anyway, the tribe of Shimon ceases to be discussed in the Bible. And scholars believe that it was basically absorbed into the tribe of Judah, which meant that the two tribes in the south were really, the three tribes were Judah, which had absorbed the tribe of Shimon, and the tribe of Benjamin. Okay, so that takes care of this 13 versus 12 problem in terms of the number of tribes. All right, so they were all held together in a decentralized confederation. They recognized the tribal status of each other, and they recognized that they were ruling the lands that they were given by God through Moses and Joshua, Yahushua. Okay? But during this 180 years, not being a centralized kingdom, they were at a disadvantage in terms of the relations with the neighboring kingdoms. And they were often and frequently attacked. The tribes in the north were attacked by the Ammonites, the Ammonite kingdom to the east, the kingdom of Ammon. And the tribes of Judah and Benjamin were attacked by the kingdom of the Philistines to the west. And so over a 180-year period, a clamor eventually arose from the people to join all of them together, the tribes of the north and the tribes of the south, together under a central government, which would be a king, a monarchy. That's all the people of the world knew about at that time as forms of government, was a dictatorship, a king, a kingdom, so that they'd be stronger to resist these attacks. So from about the year 1021, before the Common Era, until 922, before Common Era, BCE, the Israelites, the 12 tribes, formed the Kingdom of Israel. And it had a series of kings, and this period from 1021 to 922 BCE is known as the Unified Kingdom Era. But as you'll see, it was anything from unified. Okay, but in terms of the succession of kings, we had two houses, the house of Saul, or Shaul, and the house of David, or David. Okay, and these are the kings that we had during the period from 1021 to 922 BCE. The first king of Israel, and it was all called Israel. The first king of Israel was King Shaul. He ruled for about 22 years and was killed in battle with one of, I think it was the Ammonites to the east. He was succeeded by Ishbaal ben Shaul, his son, who ruled only 2 years. He was assassinated during civil war. That's right, folks. Even though we had a quote-unquote unified kingdom, it was fraught with dissension between the northern and southern, what became later officially the northern and southern kingdoms. Okay, and one of the people who was a leader in the southern area was David ben Yishai. Yeah, the King David, who we know as King David. And so some people theorize that the assassination during this civil war, who was one of the leaders in the south of the rebellion that was going on against the unified rule of the house of Saul, was who would later become and rule on the throne over everyone, who was King David, David ben Yishai. And so some people theorize that it was he who, either through his agents or himself, assassinated his brother-in-law, who was sitting on the throne for 2 years. After King Saul died, Ishbaal ben Shaul, the son of King Saul, took over the throne and ruled 2 years. But, meanwhile, David had married one of the daughters of King Saul. And so he was a son-in-law of King Saul. And so he had access to, and very well could have assassinated, Ishbaal, the son of King Saul, and then ascended to the throne. In any event, he ascended to the throne upon the assassination of Ishbaal ben Shaul. So David ben Yishai became the king over the unified, quotes again, unified kingdom of Israel. He ruled for 38 years, and during this time, through war, largely, and through making treaties with those that did not want to go to war with the kingdom of Israel, he expanded the kingdom into what became an empire, running all the way from the Mediterranean, all the way to Persia and to or Babylonia, excuse me, which would be, I guess, the Euphrates River, and running all the way down into the Arabian Peninsula, all the way from there up to the north, up to where Turkey is now, the kingdom of Tyre at that time on the coast, the Phoenicians. Okay, when he died, his son, Shlomo ben David, better known in English as King Solomon, ruled for 40 years. And it was really, his name, Shlomo, is Shalom, means peace. And at this time, it was unprecedented peace. But the politics between the southern and northern regions during this whole entire time, this 180-year period, was, I'd have to call them fractious. And as I said, even included the civil war that resulted in David HaMelech's ascension to the throne. So as soon as King Solomon, who was incredibly mighty, okay, and unchallenged in his possession of the throne, as soon as he died, his son, Rehoboam ben Shlomo, the son of Israel, ruled for 6 years. But it immediately started unraveling the unified kingdom. And so between either 930 or 920, whatever you want to assign it as when it unraveled, the unified kingdom of Israel split into they went their separate ways into two kingdoms. The northern kingdom of Israel, consisting of the 10 northern tribes, and the southern kingdom of Judah, consisting of what was now three tribes that had become two, the kingdom of kingdoms of Judah, Shimon, and Benjamin, which had become Judah and Benjamin, with Shimon no longer being discussed in the Bible. And what happened then to them was between 920 and 720 BCE, before the Common Era, the northern kingdom of Israel, which consisted of the 10 northern tribes, ruled itself and was finally conquered, though, in the year 720 BCE by the Assyrian Empire. And the tribes that occupied the northern kingdom were sent into exile by the Assyrian Empire and were sent into exile in what is now modern-day Iran. Okay, they're never mentioned again in the Bible. They are no longer discussed in the Bible. They become what is called the 10 lost tribes. These are the 10 lost tribes that we don't know anything more about, and which scholars have discussed and put forth various theories everywhere from the Pashtun tribes of modern-day Afghanistan and Pakistan, you know, being descended from the from the tribe of Joshua, and the tribe of Ephraim, which is one of the descendants of Joshua, all the way to the British, the people of Britain, being descended from the 10 lost tribes, which is interesting too, because just as a little side note here. One of the oldest myths of the Irish people is that they came on a boat from the Middle East. So they claim to have origins in the Middle East, which can be interpreted to be that they believe that they could be descended from one of the 10 lost tribes. And all the way to the tribes of Ethiopia, the Ethiopian Jews, being another version of how they are Jewish today, because there are Jews in Ethiopia, the black Jews of Ethiopia, which most of them, the classical explanation is they're descended from the Queen of Sheba. But then this would be a different version of how they became Jews, that they were descended from one of the 10 lost tribes. So there are many different theories about what happened to these 10 tribes that are quote-unquote lost. Okay, and that is, of course, that they were sent into Iran from their having been conquered by the Assyrian Empire. Okay, in the year 720 BCE. Now, from about the year 930 or 920 BCE to the year 586 BCE, 200 years closer to the present, the southern kingdom of Judah existed. Okay, and as I said, this consisted of the three southern tribes of Judah, Benjamin, and Shimon. So, but we don't hear anything about Shimon from shortly after the time when the Israelite people, around 1200 BCE. So they have been assimilated into, lost their separate identity, tribal identity, by being assimilated into the tribe of Judah. So basically, at this time, we're talking about the two southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin. They continue to exist as a separate political entity for another 150 years after the northern kingdom had been conquered by Assyria. Okay, during that 150-year period, the kingdom of Assyria is conquered by the kingdom of Babylonia. And it was at this time that Babylonia, that it was under the rule, the Assyrian Empire under the rule of Babylonian Empire, that the northern Jews, Israelites, were told that they could take lands to the east in what's now Iran. I guess then it was Persia. Okay, but in the year 586, under the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar of the Babylonian Empire, under in a series of attacks that went on for about 20 or 30 years, the kingdom of Judah was eventually conquered. And in 586 BCE, before the Common Era, the city of Jerusalem and the temple was razed, destroyed, just knocked down to the ground flat. And all of the people of the southern kingdom, all of the Jews, were sent into captivity to the city of Babylon. Okay, and this is the background against which Ezekiel's ministry takes place. So the captivity occurred in 586 BCE and lasted between 50 and 70 years. And Ezekiel's ministry took place between 593 and 571 before the Common Era. So this means that Ezekiel's ministry is divided into two parts, and you can see this in the book of Ezekiel. The first part of his ministry took place to the people, to the Jews living in Jerusalem during the siege of Jerusalem, of the city of Jerusalem, by the Babylonian Empire. And he prophesied and preached as a priest and prophet during that time period. And then, so that'd be between 593, before the Common Era, and 586, a period of about 7 years. And during this time, he was preaching and prophesying to the people of Israel about how all of these troubles had come to them by virtue of how they had corrupted the sacrifices and the rituals in the temple. And then the city fell, and the temple was destroyed in 586 BCE. And all the people were taken into captivity and marched eastward to Babylon. And then his, including Ezekiel, and his, the second part of the book of his ministry to the people of Israel takes place while he is one of the captives, Jewish captives in Babylon. And at that time he expands his his condemnation from the people of Israel to the nations, meaning the other people of the world who have helped to corrupt Israel and brought them down. And in the book of Ezekiel, it's very clear that the fall of the southern kingdom and the fall of the city of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple is a punishment from God at the hands of the Babylonian Empire. But it's a punishment for the corruption of the Jews and the corruption of the rituals and sacrifices that took place in the capital. But then Ezekiel goes on to say that God says that this will come to an end and that the kingdom of Israel will be reestablished and that the city of Jerusalem will be rebuilt and the temple will be rebuilt. And that is a very long vision at the very end of the book of Ezekiel about his vision with great detail over how the temple is going to be reestablished. All right. So this is the context in which Ezekiel's vision of the chariot takes place. It's a context in which the people receive the land of, come into possession of the promised land, the land promised and covenanted to them by God, to their forefathers. So they come into possession around 1200. And then they govern themselves as a decentralized confederation without a king for about 180 years. But they are subject to the attacks of their neighbors, and who are better organized because they're kingdoms. So they call out to each other for the establishment of a kingdom, and a kingdom is established that lasts for several hundred years and is ruled by the house of Saul and then by the house of David. But they never got along. The groups of tribes in the northern and the southern areas drifted apart, because the nature of the land that they occupied was different. There were the fertile plains of the West Bank in the north, and the not so fertile, poorer areas of the three, which had become two tribes to the south. There were the large population in the north and the small population in the south. And so they were always kind of at odds with each other, and these tensions continued to rise, and really the unification into the single kingdom of Israel never really took place except through civil war, which culminated in the assassination of Saul's son by either agents of or people loyal to King David, who was ruling the tribal areas of the south, or by agents favorable to him, or by him himself, David himself. And then David became the king, and he unified the two kingdoms, the southern and northern kingdoms. But that only lasted through David's reign of 38 years and King Solomon's, his son's, reign through 40 years. Because as soon as Solomon's son took the throne, all of these tensions and long time problems that had been held in check by the two powerful kings of David and Solomon were released, and the son of King Solomon, Rehoboam, was unable to hold those tensions and forces in check, and so they spiraled out of control, and the kingdom was divided into two formal kingdoms, a northern and a southern kingdom. The one kingdom lasted for about the kingdom of Israel lasted for about 100 years, or excuse me, lasted for about 180 years. And then they were conquered by the Assyrians and sent into exile and never heard from again. And the southern kingdom lasted for about another 150 years or so when it was conquered by Babylon, who had previously conquered the Assyrian Empire. And they were taken into captivity in Babylon. So all of the Israeli people over a period of 150 years were conquered and taken into and sent into exile. The 10 northern tribes sent into what we believe is exile in Iran, and the southern two tribes of Benjamin and Judah taken into captivity by the Babylonians, but eventually released. Okay, so it was this kind of terrible history, even though there was a glorious period when King David ruled and King Solomon ruled. Within a six-year period, that glory just went from this high level of glory when King David and Solomon had an empire, to where they had nothing, where their city was burned to the ground, where all the blocks of the temple were pulled to the ground by animals, oxen and donkeys hooked up to grappling hooks, to where the walls of the temple were pulled to the ground. And they were sent back into captivity, just like before when they were in Egypt, as if all of this had come to a terrible end. It was this feeling of hopelessness, this feeling of judgment at the hand of God, that was the context in which God chose and sent his priest and prophet Ezekiel. And it was that context in which God came in a vision to Ezekiel, in which Ezekiel saw the chariot with the living creatures and the wheels and the lightning running up and down, and sitting in the chariot a throne of God, and sitting on that throne a man, God himself. Now then, that's going to conclude today's teaching, and on Wednesday we will go on to discuss how this background of history and going from glory and triumph and glory and kingdom to defeat and captivity and judgment at the hand of God, and the vision of the chariot, how that played out from about the second century in the Common Era up until the time about the end of the 12th century when Kabbalah came into the picture, and we'll discuss then Merkaba mysticism. And what Merkaba mysticism really was, and what it looked like, and how it was practiced. So we'll be doing that on Wednesday. In the meantime, this teaching will be rebroadcast tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll continue our teachings on Wednesday live at the same time, same place as we did today. So, in the meantime, don't forget to remember God at least twice each day. Until we meet again, may you go from strength to strength, and be well. Sei gesund.